says that Yosef was punished with an extra 2 years in prison because he asked the Saramashkim to remember him to Paro and didn't rely on God. And all of them, Farshim, ask that we know that we have to make hishtadlus, that you can't rely on miracles, ain't somchim al hanes, but we have to put in our efforts in everything, whether it's earning a living, whether it's going to the doctor, whether it's looking for shiduchim, whatever it may be. We have to put in our efforts, and what was wrong with Yosef putting in his effort? Here he had a chance, naturally, to get out of prison. He had the ear of the Saramashkim, who had the ear of Paro. What was so terrible? Tell him to remember him. So they say various answers. The answer I understand that I think could be is the following. The Michtam Eliyahu says that even though we have to put in effort, make hishtadlus, but no one should ever think that it's a cause and effect situation, where because we put in the effort, we create and cause the result. But it's merely a prerequisite. It's a condition. You have to do what is natural, so miracles don't happen that would take away your free choice, and it looks like it happened naturally, and therefore you have to do things that will make your earning a living or your getting well or whatever it may be look natural. But the fact is that you're just fulfilling a condition. Hold the questions at the end. You're just fulfilling a condition. And the truth is that it's God who is giving you the living, giving you the refuah, the healing, and you are just fulfilling a prerequisite, fulfilling a condition. But it's not a cause and effect relationship. And therefore, Yosef's problem was that it appeared from what he said that he wasn't just fulfilling a condition, but he felt he was orchestrating the whole thing. He could have just said, remember me, remember me. And then he put in his effort, he gave a natural way for things to happen, and God will take over. But Yosef went one step beyond that, and he looked like he was orchestrating the whole thing. Remember me, and remember me to Paro. He is thinking, or at least intimating, that he is making the result. And he's orchestrating and directing how it should happen. So therefore, his punishment was 2 extra years in prison. Why? In the end, right, it seems a little incongruous that if God didn't like the fact that he put in too much effort and relied too much on the Saramashkim, then why did he let him get out of prison from the Saramashkim exactly as he thought? He should have made the Saramashkim die, and he should have got out of prison in a way totally unrelated to the Saramashkim. That would have taught him the lesson. What are you relying on him and not on me? You see, you can't rely on him. But he got out the exact same way that he thought. The Saramashkim remembered him to Paro. So I want to say the following. That the Gemara says that a person, when it's talking about testimony, that a person can remember something, that it should be fresh to act upon for 12 months. After that, it becomes stale and filed away in your memory filing cabinet. Therefore, if Yosef told the Saramashkim remember him, how long could the Saramashkim remember Yosef to act upon it? 12 months, 1 year. If he told Paro at the last day of that year what happened, how long could Paro remember to act upon it? Another year. So at the end of 2 years, it couldn't have happened from Yosef, naturally. Then you see it was God. That's what God said. I can make you come out of prison exactly the way that you think that you're orchestrating, but I'm going to make it happen 2 years later when it's clear that it wasn't because of you, that it was because of me.
You said it's because you remember only for 12 years?
12 months. Okay. So comes out, bottom line from all of this is that when a person looks at the world, most of us see physical, social, economic, political causes and effects in this world. But they're really just the externals. What really moves the world is spiritual forces, and ultimately, the ultimate spiritual force, which is God. And the outer facade is only a facade. It appears to be cause and effect, but it's really not. It's really what's moving the world is the inner spiritual values. The same, similar, that was the sin of the brothers when they sold Yosef. They looked at the external indicators and came to the conclusion that Yosef was a threat to them, that everything he was doing was to push them away, just like Yishmael and Esav were pushed away, and to take over. When in fact, had they looked a little deeper, right, they would have seen that that wasn't the case at all. Had they looked to beyond the outer facade, they would have seen something deeper. They would have seen what his real intentions were. Also, they would have seen that God is orchestrating this. They assumed that the dreams, what's it called, that he had were just external dreams that he dreamt up because of what was on his mind, which is one kind of dream. But they failed to realize that there's another kind of dream, a dream that's orchestrated by God that has an inner value to it. It's not just an external thing, but it's an inner revelation that they didn't see. They weren't able to see the inner workings of things. They were too much impressed with the externals. And therefore, Yosef showed them that the folly of their ways. He accused them of being spies, framed them, where all the external things pointed to the fact that they were guilty, when they knew internally they weren't guilty, and they saw from that that you can sometimes distort and corrupt the externals and really not get a good picture of what's going on if you only see the external things. Because they knew deep down they weren't spies, yet everything that happened made it appear as if they were. In addition, what's it called? That's why he, one of the reasons why he accused them of being spies. That's what a spy is. A spy is somebody who on the outside looks like any normal citizen, but he's really looking towards the inside to see what's going on, right? It says a spy is lirosis ervas haaretz. He wants to see the exposed places of the land and get down and see what's hidden, the secret things. So your problem was that you didn't act as spies. You only took the external things and that's what it was. But you didn't go beyond the external. You didn't go beyond looking and searching out and spying out what's really going on behind the scenes. Like these WikiLeaks, what's it called, the picture you get of diplomacy and world politics is very different when you see it on the outside and when you see what's going on behind the scenes on the inside. So a spy is somebody who on the outside looks one way, but on the inside is looking to uncover the secrets of the country, right? And a spy is somebody who looks beyond the external and wants to get to know what the inner secrets of the country are. Could be that that is another reason why Paro, when he dreamt his dream and he called all of his dream interpreters and magicians and wise people to interpret it, they couldn't interpret it in a way that was satisfactory and acceptable to Paro. The Medrash says they did interpret the dream. Right? What did they say? You're going to have seven daughters, and seven daughters are going to die. You're going to conquer seven, provinces, and you're going to lose seven provinces. That was what the fat cows and the skinny cows and the fat grains and the skinny grains meant. Why did Paro like that interpretation? How did he know? That he rejected. What interpretation except Yosef? How did he know? He didn't know Yosef's interpretation was true. Didn't happen until years later, the beginning of the plenty and the famine. So how did he know that what Yosef said was true, the fact that it's going to be 7 years of plenty and 7 years of famine, and not what they said? I was thinking maybe I have other answers to it, but one reason could be that Paro said there's a portion of this dream that nobody addressed except Yosef. What was that? Mm-hmm. It says I was standing on the Yaor, on the Nile. And from the Nile came all these things. Mm-hmm. If it's I'm going to have seven daughters, or I'm going to have, what's it called? That's a very simple external thing, right? It's not very, not much of a really allegory. It's just that the cows represent the daughters, or the sheaves represent the daughters, or they represent conquering a nation, but those are just external things. It says that all of this happened when I was standing on the Yaor. The Yaor has a connection to the word or, light. Why is the Yaor, the Nile, called light? Because rain is called light. Because rain brings light to the world, but in addition, it also emanates from the lights, from the mazolos. The moon, the sun, are very much involved in determining when it rains and when it doesn't rain. And because of that, it also comes from God, who is the light of the world. Now, Paro believed in the Nile as a god. And that was the light, right, that emanated from the mazolos, from the constellations, from the horoscope that filtered into this world. That's where he stopped. Sun, the moon, they worshipped the sun in Egypt. They didn't go beyond that and see the light of God that filtered through all of those constellations and heavenly bodies or whatever. So, but therefore, it's called a Yaor, even though a Yaor may be a natural body of water that basically is filled with rainwater. But when you dig these tributaries, these canals, they're also called Yaors, because everything emanates from that rain, from these constellations, and from that comes light and living life to the to the land. Because without rain, there's no life. So the rain itself is called light. It's a life-giving light that comes from light and goes to light. So that's why it's Yaor. Yaor, the Yud, is the future. And therefore, Paro said, that aspect of the dream, that I'm standing on my God, and that all of this has some kind of deeper significance. If all it is, I'm going to have daughters, or I'm going to conquer countries, there's no deeper significance here. It's not something that is a phenomenal thing that God is bringing that's going to affect who knows what. It'll affect a very small thing. But since I'm standing on the Yaor and all these things came from the Yaor, obviously there's some inner importance over here that transcends just having seven daughters or losing seven daughters or conquering seven nations. There must be something universally important here, a famine that's going to affect all the lands. And it's going to affect Egypt and what Egypt's going to be. This is a godly kind of revelation. And only Yosef's interpretation fit that godly revelation. In fact, he said, God will tell you, because it comes from the gods. Paro stopped at his gods, but Yosef told him there's a God who's beyond all of that, who all these things emanate from. That was the reason why Yosef knew that Paro knew that only Yosef's interpretation took into consideration all the aspects of the dream, and therefore only his could be true. Now let's connect this to Hanukkah. If Yaor has a connection to or to light, and light represents that inner kedusha, the inner holiness, the inner workings of the world, the pnimius, so menorah also has from or. Minorah. It comes from light. The whole light of the menorah emanates from God's light. That was exactly what the lesson of Hanukkah was through the menorah. That the main thing in this world is not the externals. Greece represented a total belief in an external world. They didn't believe in anything internal. Their gods were human beings, superhuman beings. Well, with all the foibles of human beings, physical beings that robbed and stole each other's wives, and basically were supermen and superwomen. They didn't have no spiritual god. They had physical, right, human, superhuman gods. And Yavan didn't believe in anything inner, any inner values, any spiritual values, but all they did was deify the body, beauty, physical might, physical external knowledge, logic, nothing internal, nothing spiritual, nothing beyond the external. And we've explained in the past that the name Yavan symbolizes that. Yavan is three lines, Yod, Vav, and Nun, with no inside. There's nothing inside, it's all external. And those three lines, when you look at the world from an entirely external, physical, material perspective, it is evaluated in quantity. And that, on the other hand, when you look at the world from an inner spiritual perspective, you don't evaluate by quantity, you evaluate it by quality. But in the quantitative world of physicality and materialism, right, which is all quantitative, there are three generic quantities, small, medium, and large. That's the yavan. Three lines with no inside in three sizes, small, yud, medium-sized, vav, large, nun. Three sizes. And the three lines are parallel. They never meet. Because in a world bereft of any holiness and just external physicality, there's no achdus, there's no unity, because everything is disjointed and separate to itself. It's only spiritual things that can bring things together and unify them. So that is Yavan. However, Yavan is also the word noi, beauty, backwards. If you turn the word nun, vav, yud backwards, you get Yavan. What does that mean? That even though the ikar in this world is the spiritual, and that is what the miracle of Chanukah came to teach us. How so? It says in the Al HaNisim that God put the giborim b'yad chaloshim, he gave the strong in the hands of the weak, and the many in the hands of the few, and the righteous in the hands of the wicked, and the wicked in the hands of the righteous, and the impure in the hands of the pure, and those who were sinners in the hands of the people who learned Torah. So everybody asks, I understand the first two are miracles. The few and the weak win over the many and the strong, that's a miracle. But where is there some unwritten law that righteous people always lose, and if they win, it's a miracle? Why is the wicked in the hands of the righteous a miracle? And I think the intent is not that they're all miracles. The intent is the following. We did not win against the Greeks because we were few and weak. We won despite the fact that we were few and weak. So why did we win? Because we were righteous, pure, and learned Torah. We had the spiritual edge. They had the physical edge. Whenever there's a conflict between the physical and the spiritual, which one is the main? The spiritual, because we won. They had all the physical edge, and we didn't have that. But we had the spiritual edge, and they didn't have that. So when there came a conflict between the two, the spiritual overcame the physical. And that is exactly the miracle of the oil. It doesn't make a difference how much you have, quantity. The main thing is how pure it is. If it's pure, it can last indefinitely. And if it's not, you could have a ton of it, and it's ineffective. And that is the message of the menorah, says the Navi Zechariah in the Haftorah for this week's Sedra. Lo Bechayel, he's shown a menorah, and he's asked if he knows what it means. And God tells him what it means is, the menorah symbol is Lo Bechayel v'lo b'koach. It's not numbers, it's not physical strength, but it's ruchi, it's my spirit that makes the difference in this world. It's the spiritual things that make the difference. That is the lesson of the menorah, which we'll discuss in a little while. And that is exactly what we say in the Al HaNisim. Why in the Al HaNisim of Purim the word Gadol doesn't appear at all? In the Al HaNisim Chanukah it appears four times. Kohen Gadol, Ulecho Asisa Shem Gadol, Uleamcha Yisrael Asisa Teshua Gedola, Lahodos Lahala Lashimcha Gadol. Four times in that prayer the word Gadol or Gedola appears. You can look up the prayer later and you'll get where it is. Four times. Why this obsession with the word Gadol? Because the ancestor of Yavan, Yefes, was called Gadol, big. But that means big externally, quantitatively. But our concept of big is not that at all. That's not what's really big. The Kohen Gadol, huh?
Sorry, in which tefillah did it say Gadol four times?
In Al HaNisim, for Chanukah. So, our concept of gadol, big, is not quantitative. It's qualitative. It's spiritual. How do I know that? The first time it says it is by Kohen Gadol. How did they pick the Kohen Gadol? They measured all the Kohanim and they weighed them, and the fattest, tallest Kohen became the Kohen Gadol? Obviously not. It had nothing to do with how big he was physically. It had to do with what, how big he was spiritually. That's Kohen Gadol. And that is the lesson that we say when we sing Mol Sur opposite the candles. Mol Sur deals with all the empires that existed but don't exist anymore, except for the last one, Edom. Mitzrayim, the empire of Egypt, is no longer around. Neither is the empire of Babylonia or Media or Persia or Greece. Where are they in the history books? They're not standing by any candle singing about us. But we're standing by our candle singing about them. And they had everything physical, external going for them. Money, might, armies, land. And they don't exist anymore. And we had none of that. But we had these candles. We had that inner spiritual light. And we're still around. And they're not. So obviously it shows what is the main thing in this world. Not what they had, but what we had. One last idea of, in this point, and then we'll get to the real point I want to speak about. And that is that the food of Hanukkah in outside of Eretz Israel is latkes. I don't know if you all are familiar with, you know, that's what you ate in Chutz Laaretz for Hanukkah, latkes. That's what we served. That's what served at parties. When I first came to Eretz Israel about 28 years ago, I had mamish culture shock. I went to a few parties the first few days of Hanukkah. There's no latkes. What do they serve instead? Jelly donuts. Now, what in the world does jelly donuts have to do with Hanukkah? Jelly donuts are for, you know, carnivals or whatever. What in the world does that have to do with Hanukkah? It was really, really culture shock. But then I saw at an army base a gigantic billboard with one word on it, latkes, with an arrow pointing towards the army base. I said, wow, at least in the army they preserve the custom of eating latkes. And somebody told me, don't get carried away. That says latekes for the ceremony. So, but then I, after thinking about it, really, jelly donuts are more significant to Hanukkah than latkes. Why do we eat latkes? Because they're fried in oil. And it's reminiscent of the miracle that happened through oil. Okay, I'm sure if you put a wick in a latke, it would last for 16 days without any miracles. So that really reminds me of the oil. So jelly donuts also are deep fried. So they also remind me of the oil. But jelly donuts have an extra message. And that is the real message of Hanukkah. It's not what's on the outside that's the main thing. It's what's on the inside. That is the lesson of a jelly donut. So it has both ideas. It's reminiscent of the oil and the real message of Hanukkah. Okay, if that's the case, right? So that's a lesson of Hanukkah. However, we shouldn't make the mistake to think that after all of this, that the externals are not important at all. And we just ignore them, right, and make nothing of them. Because if that would be the case, then in order to really celebrate Hanukkah and to negate the obsession of the Greeks with external beauty and external might or whatever, then we should look for the ugliest Hanukkah menorah we can find and say by us external beauty is meaningless. All of everything is just that light of the candles, and therefore get the ugliest menorahs. Now you're not allowed to do that. An ugly menorah, right? The ugliest menorah, which is an earthenware menorah that you used once, which is disgusting, you can't use. And just the opposite. It's nice to have a gold or silver menorah and then something that's aesthetically nice. So even though we hold that the ikkar is the inner things, there also is an idea of externals, which we'll get to in a second why. And therefore the Vilna Gaon on the Pasuk, Sheker HaChein, Vehevel HaYofi, Isha Yiras Hashem Yitisalo, he says that the Pasuk says that charm is false, and beauty is vain, and a woman who fears God should be extolled and praised. Mm-hmm. Says the Vilna Gaon, what it means is the following. When is beauty and charm false and vain? When there's nothing more, it's only external. But in a woman who fears God, she should be praised for her beauty and her charm. Then the externals are also important. when the, why? We'll see in 1 second why. And that's why the menorah was the vehicle of presenting that inner connection to God. Right? The light of the menorah represented the fact that God's presence dwelt amongst the Jewish people. That is the symbol of God's presence amongst the Jewish people. The menorah was a beautiful kli. It had all kinds of ornaments on it, pure gold, and it had a body. It also had, what's it called, candles. Candles meaning the receptacle for the oil. That's called a candle. It had wicks. It had oil. And then it had the light. The light was dependent on all these various parts, which were external things and material things, but more and more towards the spiritual, right, until you came to the light itself. So what does that mean? So the idea is the following. It says that the menorah was like, what's it called, beautiful. It was also made of one piece of gold, which means strength. It had strength, okay? And it was united, right? It was always one thing. So the menorah represented strength and beauty, and external strength. So, and yet it was also representative of that inner light of holiness and spirituality. So the idea is the following. There's a purpose of what's it called, of why you need a body in this world. You can't just have a soul. The body also is important. But if it's all there is, then it's worthless. Because it's dead. But if there's a body and a soul, then the body's also important vis-a-vis the soul. Why? First of all, the menorah, the branches of the menorah, the body of the menorah, which is the branches and the middle part of the menorah, which represents the body, represented the influence of the sun and moon and planets in God's shefa, God's influence coming into the world. It comes through physical things. God's presence in this world is manifested through physical things. So you need the physical things to bring God's presence into the world. Just like God's influence comes through the constellations and the horoscope or whatever. Secondly, right, it says that the branches of the menorah represent the three on the right side, people who devote themselves totally to Torah learning. And the three on the left side to people who work for a living and support the people who learn Torah. So again, right, we have the idea of the physical world and the spiritual world together, working together. The people who work in the physical world, supporting the people who are totally in the spiritual world. And then we have also, the Netziv says that the menorah is a symbol of the six branches are the six wisdoms, external wisdom, not Torah wisdom, that work together with Torah. In order to really understand the Torah, you have to understand other wisdom too. You can't build a sukkah or understand the halachas of sukkah if you don't know how to add and subtract, if you don't know mathematics. And each regiment of wisdom is a aid to Torah study. So they all face towards the middle, and God's spiritual light, Torah light, emanates from using your wisdom also. And not only that, the menorah represented Torah Shebaal Peh. Torah Shebaal Peh is not just revealed wisdom transmitted, like the Torah Shebichsav, like the written Torah. That, every letter was transmitted. We have no part in that. What we have a part is using our mind and our logic in applying the rules that God gave us and learning things out of the Torah Shebichsav, out of the written Torah. That's the oral Torah. The oral Torah is a person using his mind and enlarging and enhancing the wisdom that God revealed to us. The revealed wisdom becomes enhanced. It grows, right? It's like the ornaments on the menorah. The ornaments are spheres and flowers and cups. The cups represent the fact that you first have to receive the main wisdom. And whatever you add to it is enhancing that wisdom of Torah that is revealed. That's what the cup represents, receiving something. And then you need the flowers represent growth. You take that revealed wisdom and you make it grow. You enlarge it with your mind, with your logic, right? With your reasoning. You add that and apply it to the Torah and make it grow, make it sprout like a flower. And then there's the spheres, which represent completion, perfection. It's when human beings put their mind to the Torah and enhance it, then it really reaches its full perfection. That's what God wants. He wants us to be dynamic. He wants us to put in our effort. And when you put in effort, then the thing is more precious to you. That's the whole world here, is we should perfect ourselves and perfect the world so we can earn our share in the world to come. And it'll be precious to us. Therefore, it says that the miracle of Hanukkah is a precious mitzvah, because it deals not only with the spiritual, but how we access that spiritual. The Maccabees fought to maintain it. And the menorah, they had a light to be able to maintain it. And therefore, Hashem Yishmuel says that the menorah represents, there were four utensils in the Mishkan that had crowns. The Aron had a crown, that was the crown of Torah. The Shulchan had a crown, that was the crown of Malchus, of royalty, right? And the Mizbeach HaZohav, the golden altar where they made the incense, had a crown, that was the crown of Kahuna. Those are the three crowns, but the greatest crown is the crown of a good name. Keser Shem Tov, Olal Gabeim. That was the crown of the menorah. The menorah is where a person takes all the potential that God gives, the Kahuna, the Malchus, the Torah, and he enhances it and builds it and projects it to others. That's what a name is. A name is how you're identified by other people, what your name is, what you make for yourself. That is the menorah. The menorah represents the fact that God's light is there, but God is not going to let you access it unless you put in work. You have to light it. You have to have a body. You have to put in the wicks and the oil and actually ignite it. And in order to get it ready, you need a Kohen. Only a Kohen, only with great holiness can you prepare to put your action into developing God's light and God's Torah. You have to have the right preparation. But once you are, anybody could light the menorah. Any Jew could light the menorah. And that's why the physical plant in this world has a few different functions. One is to bring to be a conduit to bring the spiritual forces into the world. Just like we said, it represents the constellations, the sun, the moon, which filter the light of God into this world. Okay? That also represents one of the decrees that the Greeks made against us. They targeted Rosh Chodesh, the new moon, which has to do with the moon, which has to do with the light of God coming into the world filtered through a physical thing, the moon. And that's how, by sanctifying the new moon, we bring holiness into the world. So the one function of the physical plant, of the menorah, was to represent this idea that God's light needs to be filtered through physical things to come into this world. You need those physical things as the conduit to be able to have the spiritual in this world. The second thing is that we are inspired by what we see. And therefore, if we see something beautiful, it inspires us to beauty. In fact, the Sfarno says, or the Rabbeinu Bachya says, that the purpose of the menorah, this beautiful kli with the light, was to impress upon us the beauty and respect for the Makom HaMikdash, how holy and awesome it was. And the menorah, right, brought out the beauty and the dignity of the Beis HaMikdash. and directed our emotions. How do motions create emotions? Going through the seeing something physically makes an impression on you. If you see something nice, it makes a good impression. If you see something ugly, it makes a bad impression. So you want the beautiful menorah to reflect that inner beauty, the inner spiritual beauty, so you can physically, emotionally relate to it. Because we have to relate from the physical and emotional, not from the spiritual alone. We live in a physical world where that was making an impression on us. So that's the second function. And that corresponds to another decree that the Yevonim made. They decreed against women to defile marriage and Jewish women. A Jewish woman who got married had to have relations with the Greek general first. And they didn't allow mikvahs and taras ha-mishpacha, purity of the family. So they wanted to defile the whole concept of marriage in women. And women, like we said, are known for their beauty. But the beauty, if it's only skin deep, is worthless. It's the external beauty that reflects the inner beauty, the inner holiness that a woman has. So that's another connection to the decrees of Hanukkah and why the physical plant is important when you look at it properly. Another reason is that the physical wisdom is an aid to the spiritual. In this physical world, the spiritual needs to be aided by the physical. You can't really understand the Torah, which is spiritual wisdom, without the other secular wisdoms that help you to understand it. But they're subordinate to it, right? They're not the main thing. They're just aids to the spiritual. So that's another aspect of the physical. The physical aids the spiritual, okay? And that's why the Greeks also wanted to decree that we should forget the Torah, meaning that we should forget the oral Torah. So this represents, the menorah represents the oral Torah, which is our part of enhancing both with other wisdoms and learning out things from the Torah, and deriving things from the Torah, enhancing the Torah with our wisdom. That is also part of what the menorah represents. And another thing is that you need an infrastructure. Spiritual things in this world are very ethereal, don't have any body to them. You need a body to give the neshama an ability to exist in this world. It has to be connected to a body. Just like the flame has to be connected to a wick, and the wick to oil, and the oil in a physical container, and the container on a body of the menorah. Okay, and that is what's it called, the concept of bris milah, the idea that the body is a receptacle for the soul, and it is the body that connects God to the soul through the body in this physical world. And it also represents money. They wanted to make decrees against Jewish money, that any Jew owned any material thing had to inscribe on it, "We have no share in the God of Israel." So all the gezeros that the Yevonim made was against Rosh Chodesh, right? Time, and the mazalos, right? That we said that the influence of God filters through those things. So it counteracts that decree. Then they wanted to make a gezera against Shabbos. Shabbos represents, that's the next thing, that the purpose of the physical world is that it shouldn't be perfect, and we should be able to perfect it, because spiritual things are perfect. So God took the world, made a physical world, imperfect world, and gave us the ability to perfect it. And that's like Shabbos. Shabbos is the representation of Olam Haba, the world to come, which this physical world leads to Shabbos. The 6 days of creation lead to Shabbos because we perfect the world and bring it towards that perfection of Shabbos. And therefore, that corresponds to the decree against Shabbos. And the idea that we need a body, an infrastructure, to be able to give strength and body to the spiritual in a physical world, right? That represents the idea of bris milah and money. So all of these things represent the purpose of the external, but not like Greece, that that's all there is. The main thing is the spiritual. But you need a body, you need the externals to be able to enhance the spiritual. You can't have the spiritual without the physical too. Don't discount the physical. Just discount the physical if there's nothing more than that. But if it's a partner with the spiritual, that's what's necessary in this world. And that's why it says that ner mitzvah, after you get through the physical infrastructure of the world, you go one step higher and you have mitzvahs. Mitzvahs also involve themselves with spirit, with physical things, but you're doing spiritual things with physical things. The mitzvah is like the place where you put the oil, the receptacle, that's the ner. Mitzvah is like a ner, it's a receptacle. Now you're getting closer to the spiritual is contained within that ner, which is the mitzvah. That's by doing these physical things, eating these things, doing these things, not doing these things, not being involved in certain physical things, you unleash spiritual power just like you put the oil in the ner. But Torah is the or itself. Torah is the life itself. Torah is a total spirituality. But in order to get that Torah, the Torah or the real spirituality, you need the body, you need the preparation, you need the nair, you need the wick, you need the oil, and the preparation of it has to be through holiness of a kohen. But after that, anybody can make use of it and bring that light into the world through the physical things. And that's why this light is the symbol that God's presence dwelt amongst the Jewish people. But in order to maintain that presence, we have to do our part. We have to light that menorah. We have to bring out that connection to God. We have to create that connection to God through our actions. And because it represents our actions, doing it, right? Not just getting it for free, having it showered upon you, but you being involved, that makes it precious. And that's why the mitzvah of Chanukah says a precious mitzvah, because it represents our effort, which makes it precious to us because we put in the effort. And another aspect of the menorah is that the menorah illuminates the shulchan. The shulchan represents royalty. But the king, and the king is involved in the physical parts of the Jewish people. Right? But the king needs advice from Torah sages, from prophets, which is represented by the light of the menorah, which shines on the shulchan. And the Chashmonaim made a mistake. And they thought that that represented the fact that the kings should be the same ones who were the Kohanim. The Kohanim who spread God's light and word and wisdom should be the kings. So this way you have the menorah, but really they're two separate things. You need somebody to concentrate on creating the physical things and somebody to be involved with the spiritual things. The menorah and the shulchan, they're not one thing. They're two separate things. And they should have remained separate, and the Chashmonaim didn't do that, and they usurped the kingdom from Yehuda, and therefore they were punished in the end. And that's what the Meshech Chochma says, that the menorah makes it like daytime, even at night, that you can see things clearly. That's the purpose of the menorah, to be able to shine clarity on those physical things in the world that need that clarity to be able to be used properly. In the end of the Sedra, it says another function of a candle. It's hinted to at least. It says when the brothers came, left, he sent a messenger, and he hid the cup in Binyamin's sack. And they went and searched for it. Vayechapes. They went to search, look inside to see what's there. And the Gemara learns out that searching is done with candles. And that's how we know that you search for the chametz with a candle. But what's the idea of a candle? The candle represents the physical and spiritual worlds together. But in order to really connect those two worlds, you need the light to search out the inside and see what's good and see what's bad, get rid of the chametz. Right, search out the negatives and get rid of them, take them out from the inside of these physical things and replace it with the light of the candle with spiritual light. That's how you search out things. If you just look at the external, you don't search internally, you're missing the point of what this world is all about. So the candle of the menorah represents also searching, inward searching, good and bad. And therefore, by being involved with the external world, you reach the internal world. The external world serves the internal world, but it's necessary. You can't have a totally spiritual world in a physical world. It only comes about through a connection to the physical. So even though Chanukah is what's it called, is a yontif, that the message is the ikkar in this world is not the physical but the spiritual, don't make the mistake to think that we negate the physical. We only have spiritual. What it means is that the physical is very important, but it's only important if it serves the spiritual and takes it into account, and not when it supplants the spiritual and totally negates it. Right? But when they work together, then the physical is also important. Don't lose sight of the physical either. Have that beautiful menorah, right, to represent what Chanukah represents.